Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
What are we, 78 days now to the US elections on the 5th of November. It's a nip and tuck between Kamala Harris, the vibes artist, and Donald Trump, the jibes artist. So the, Lorcan Nyan is with us this morning from the Rust Belt of Cork, that is Mallow. So obviously you would be Republican leaning, I would have thought, but no, your sympathies go elsewhere. Welcome, Lorcan.
We have no sympathies, we only have analysis, Oliver.
Sure, yeah. We just think she's a genius, Kamala Harris.
I think she's been very, very effective. I think she's been surprisingly effective, and I'm looking at her purely as a campaigner, okay? So
right.
Her capacity as a campaigner to pick a message, to run with a message that connects has been very, very effective. And I think she's a genius for one particular reason at the moment, Oliver. There was a story in CNN. Okay, that just came out, where she said she had her first meeting with the pollsters 3 weeks into her campaign, with the Democratic pollsters 3 weeks in. And they gave her all of their advice, and they had two kind of critical pieces of advice for her, where they said, will you stop with the we're not going back message? It's not forward focused enough. And will you stop with the this is weird stuff? Pull back. It's
right.
Too negative.
They really told her to not do that. Okay.
And she said, no. They're two very effective messages. They work well at my crowd, so I'm sticking with them. And there is an element of political genius to that, to be able to say, you're focus grouping it, you're wrong. I can see what's happening in front of me. I have my own instincts, and it's worked very, very well for her.
But she had the whole media establishment backing her and promoting the weird thing. I mean, that's how it becomes a thing, isn't it? When the media latch on and go, yeah, that's a good thing. We like that. Look, she's really clever.
Yeah, there's an element of the media amplifying it, which is why I suppose Trump, we used to be very, very good at, which was getting that free media where he'd say something, the media pick up and a run with. They've probably taken that off Trump a bit. Trump's gone a bit boring. He's not getting the same free media.
That's right.
The Democrats are stealing that free media from them a bit. Then obviously an element of it is organic. There is an element, Oliver, as well, where a lot of her strength now is people were so bored and sick of the Trump Biden old dynamic that anybody knew coming in, they wanted to like them. They wanted to find them interesting. They wanted to find them effective. And so therefore, they do. So there is an element of the contrast. And also, I think anybody who's coming in new and fresh would have been seen through maybe a positive lens, let's say, initially.
I was looking at the most popular podcasts in Ireland at the minute, of the episodes, and some of the names are It's Trump's Election to Lose. And the other one is Can Kamala Win on Vibes Alone? Because it is just a kind of a vibe around her at the moment. I mean, she's said very little on policy.
Yeah, I suppose they started the policy rollout as of last week, but there's not going to be a huge difference in policies between herself and Joe Biden. I mean, elections are about vibes. Yeah. You know, for
and
the
that's
most
Trump's
part.
Message, which is quite good, isn't it? It's going. He's saying she's the same as him.
She's the same, and if you're not happy with how it currently is, because look, the vast majority of Americans, if you look at the polling, about 65% of them aren't happy with the direction of the country. They aren't happy where they are now. They aren't happy with where they're going.
Yeah.
So this election, in a big way, is about looking at, right, who do we think is the change candidate? So Trump is trying to say, I'm the change candidate. I'm not the incumbent.
Yeah,
I'm coming in.
He would change things that are right there now.
That's what
he'll
say. And while what he's trying to paint her as it's more of the same continuing on, while what she's trying to say is, yes, I'm the vice president, but I'm new, I'm shiny, we're not going back, we're moving forwards, new economic message. So it's what people ultimately decide. Do they think she is just more of Joe Biden, or if they do think she's a bit of a break from the current?
It is rubbish though, isn't it? She's just a kind of shiny version of Joe Biden's policies.
It depends on how you see it.
There's no difference, is there?
But you seem to be suggesting, Oliver, that you know that this is the first candidate that has ever been a vibes candidate. Every effective political candidate there has ever been a vibes candidate. Obama was a vibes candidate. Trump was a vibes candidate. Yeah, in many ways. So, I mean, the thing about Joe Biden...
But Trump is about deregulation in terms of businesses in particular, isn't he? And he did that. And then all the regulations have come in under the Trump-Harris ticket since, and obviously the businesses are suffering.
But, I mean,
and that's why the Democrats want Kamala to appeal to businesses, because, you know, the extra paternity leave, all the extra regulations brought in have hurt the businesses.
Yeah, and there would be an idea that Kamala Harris might be a little bit more pro-business than Joe Biden was, that she might work with the tech companies in particular, actually, that Joe Biden was seen as being quite heavy-handed on the tech companies, and that she might be a little bit lighter there. I think one of the things that's happening in America at the moment that's very, very interesting, okay, is Joe Biden was actually very, very effective, right? He was effective in terms of the infrastructure acts he brought through. They have dealt with inflation probably better than we have here in Europe, really. The US, the inflation isn't as bad there as it was the kind of post-COVID. But people's feelings about the economy, regardless of the reality of the economy, are quite negative under Joe Biden. And that's why vibes can matter.
That's because of the price of groceries, isn't it?
Price of groceries. And then look, just in general, if people don't trust Joe Biden, they then don't trust him on the economy, which therefore means they don't think the economy is doing well.
Now, the Republicans are saying that the reason for inflation is because of this huge spending bill they brought in 2021. They spent like crazy. They gave tax credits to everybody. They said it discouraged people even from working. And because they went spending, obviously it caused inflation to rise. I was curious because Kamala Harris's claim is that, no, it was immediately post-COVID and what Trump was doing. And the supply, no, she doesn't blame anyone. She just said it was supply chains after COVID.
Post-COVID supply chains, yeah. I think
no one mentions the Ukraine war or the effect on energy prices. Neither of them.
Yeah, well, I think in general it's actually interesting how little the Ukraine war has been mentioned in the campaign thus far. Because that's actually, if you look at the policy fault lines between the Democrats and Republicans, the most fundamental one, or the newest most fundamental one, is support for Ukraine, where the Democrats want to continue to fund it, will be very, very supportive of it. The Republicans as an entire party, J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, as well as the rest of Republican leadership, are very much, no, we look after America, Europe can fund that. So that's actually, I mean, geopolitically is the most important difference between the two of them. But Kamala Harris isn't really talking about that.
No.
Because I suppose it's probably not seen maybe as a vote winner. So, you know, we're
Which
not going to see it.
She went out there, didn't she? She did all the security conferences in Munich, standing in for Joe Biden, talking about Ukraine. And now she doesn't talk about it at all. But then the messages are already coming in. John says, Democratic convention, high stakes. Most of us highly anxious. It's fair to say that Harris's momentum continues. The alternative is too nightmarish for me to contemplate, says John. Have the Democrats moved away from that Trump part two would be a nightmare, disaster, danger to democracy?
No, it's both. It's fundamentally both. What they want everybody talking about when it comes to Trump is Project 2025. So this blueprint that is there from Republican right-wing groups for what they will do when they get power. Trump has distanced himself from this,
yes,
but obviously lots of his people are involved in it. So the Democrats, wait for the convention. Wait for how often we hear the words Project 2025. This is the plan. That's the rollout. That's the danger bit. This is what Trump will do. He knows what he's doing this time. He didn't last time. He'll do what he said. He's written it down. Be worried, be worried, be worried. And then they have the other, we're not going back, forward focus, let's build a new America message.
It's like a tacit acceptance that the 4 years of Trump already in power wasn't quite the disaster they also portrayed before the 2016 election.
What they are saying, and what we will hear, I think particularly from Joe Biden in his address tonight, is that last time he tried to do it but didn't know what he was doing. This time he's had a longer time to plan, so he'll be more effective in bringing
through his agenda.
It's
campaigning.
It's all campaigning.
Oliver, regarding your comment that Kamala Harris being in hiding, I would argue the reason she hasn't yet had a Q&A with journalists is that she hasn't needed to, notwithstanding the short time until the election itself. Plenty of time to meet the media, take questions, says Robert. But she has to do this at some point, doesn't she?
Yeah, the lack of media interviews is interesting. There is a short-term logic to it. A cynical logic, but there is a logic to it, which is the vibes are good, momentum is going very, very well, the rallies are working exceptionally well. Don't ruin it by making a mistake. By making a mistake, and there's the potential for a mistake. So there's a short term logic to it. There is a risk though, because the longer people talk about you not doing interviews, you'll eventually have to do them to stop those questions, and you'll eventually need them anyway.
And it's not a Trump talking point. He is saying it that she, you know, he's gone to lots of mostly hostile press conferences since then, but it's not his line. It is coming through the same liberal media that's praising her at the moment. Washington Post is turning at the weekend saying, well, how long has she continue?
Yeah,
it's 30 days now, isn't it?
News entities themselves, and they had a similar problem with Joe Biden, where Joe Biden wouldn't talk to them and they took that quite badly. The long term risk to it is obviously is that you're heightening the stakes. So the longer you wait to do it, the more people are going to be watching, oh, it's your first sit-down interview. If there's a mistake then what people start saying is, oh, you were hiding because you can't do it. While if she nails the first one or two, it doesn't matter, and we'll forget about it. It won't matter that she didn't do
Has she ever done a good interview in her time as Veep? when nobody was paying her any attention for 3.5 years.
She would have done one very, very bad interview the first year. She had a tough first year as vice president. She did a very, very poor interview on the whole immigration issue where, you know, she was asked had she been to the border and she said she hadn't. Nice, and it just didn't go very, very well. She then became quite reticent about interviews. So if you read any of the background, she's quite reticent and she changed her approach. She went to a lot of college campuses is how she kind of rebuilt herself. So I'd say she is a little bit reticent herself in her own capacity to do those. But any of the press gaggles she's done since she's been president, she's been very effective. So the, you know, the 2 minutes where she's walked up, she's been able to answer the questions, to change the framing. She was asked a question yesterday about how are you going to pay for your economic policies. She wants to, you know, give subventions to housings and things like that. How are you going to pay for it?
So this is part of her 300 words that she said to the reporters in the last 30 days.
Okay. Yeah, and she was able to reframe it of saying, well, look, it's not about how much it costs. It's about the return on investment. If you do this, you'll get the money back. So she answered it quite well. But it was one question. It was on her own terms to a degree. How would she deal with a 15-minute sit-down? Mm. Who knows? Probably
or a debate.
Yeah.
And you think quite well. But I mean, the people who are praising her now in the kind of liberal media, let's face it, are the same people who said she was terrible when she would ask questions about Gaza. She would roar laughing for a bit. And it just, she seemed to laugh at very inappropriate moments. And that's what the Republicans ran with for a while, saying that her laugh is weird.
Yeah, and Trump has gone back to that yesterday, which kind of shows he's kind of running out of things. He's already gone back around where he's
back
talking.
To the thing that Republicans have said, don't do that. That's
stop,
misogynist.
Yeah, stop doing it. It's not working. Yeah, he went back and said she's got a lunatic laugh, which, look, everybody knows that is just kind of coded misogyny.
Yeah,
to
I like
it.
Her laugh is a lovely thing. It's just it's the lack of speaking out loud is the problem. Someone else messaging here: Donald Trump has gone too far this time. Did you hear him saying he is better looking than Kamala Harris? Yes, but we have a clip of it here. We have clips from both of them over the weekend. This is a rally. Where, do you know where Trump was? He was finally going back to the swing states. He did Montana last weekend, which is no use. And I think he was in Pennsylvania and she was in Pennsylvania, was she? Or was it North Carolina?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. There. Here's Trump.
I'm a better looking person than Kamala. No, I couldn't believe it. She said, you know, I had never heard that one. They said, no, her biggest advantage is that she's a beautiful woman. I'm going, huh. I never thought of that. I'm better looking than she is. In her speech yesterday, Kamala went full communist. You heard that? She went full communist. She wants to destroy our country.
Now, he is joking and the crowd are laughing when he says, I'm better looking. I think it was almost kind of vintage Trump in a way, wasn't it? Because he used to, when he looked like he was having fun, his crowd were laughing rather than looking very angry and shouting fight, fight, fight.
Yeah, and look, Trump in the past has been, he's quite funny. You know, I mean, there's a reason why he became as famous as he was in the area. He can be quite funny. Yeah, look, I think that one was a joke. It's an odd line to take. In general, I think talking about the attractiveness of candidates full stop is a line perhaps to stay away from. But look, the Republicans keep trying to make Trump a candidate now that he just isn't. They keep saying, well, oh, he's got no discipline. We want him talking about the economy. It's like, have you met your candidate over the last number of years? That's not what Donald Trump does. Donald Trump is a test marketer. He throws out lines, he waits to see what resonates, and then he doubles down on those. And that's what he's doing. He's still in the test marketing phase. He's going to throw loads of attacks, he's going to see what his audience likes, and then he'll major on one of those. He has struggled thus far. The most recent one is, we heard the end of it there, where he's saying that she's going full communist. He's calling her comrade Kamala. The Republicans have tried this with the vast majority of Democratic candidates over the last 30 years. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That seems to be what he's going to major on. He's going to go quiet for the next week though, because they let them have the convention. The Democrats.
He is doing a few rallies in between.
A few rallies, yeah. J.D. Vance
so
doing one or two prep. He'll pop up, but it's he's not going to. He'll know himself. He won't be able to dominate
the media
coverage. He has to
go and watch, because Kamala's speech on Thursday is going to be the biggest moment of her life in politics so far. Because she has to set out who she is and what she's going to do.
Yeah.
Because her policy statement on Friday on the economy was kind of bizarre. This sort of, we're going to have a bureau that's going to fix prices to stop prices going up. That's what he means. That's what he's talking about the communism bit, isn't it? Because
They are as part of their response to inflation. I mean, the communications response to inflation is kind of a, we're going to take on big corporates, so we're going to take on big pharma and control prices there. And also, if there's any price gouging, we will come in and we will stop it and we will push back against it. So yeah, it is kind of a big government message that the Republicans quite enjoy running against.
Yeah.
That being said, do you really want to put yourself on the side of big business in that way? Not a pro-business, but on the side of big business for Republicans.
But I suppose if you start start saying you fix prices of things, it will cause shortages. There will be hoarding on one side, and obviously suppliers won't bother sending it down the line, you know. Yeah. You'll have empty shelves. So that's the thing that resonates, isn't it? Rather than, no, we support the big businesses. America loves its capitalism.
America does love its capitalism, yeah. And that's in very many ways the Republicans have ridden to victory many a time on that love of kind of uncontrolled, yeah. unregulated capitalism. But you're right. Look, Thursday night is the whole next 4 days is huge for Kamala Harris's campaign.
And today is Joe Biden's day. It is the worst end of the ticket, isn't it? Monday night at the DNC.
Yeah, I mean, it's officially, I think, down as the far the people is the theme. But I think tick the box is really the theme of this evening, because you've right. got Joe Biden. I think Hillary Clinton is also speaking this evening. It's the, we need to give them their slots, but we want to ramp up for Thursday night. So we'll hold back Obama, we'll hold back Bill Clinton, we'll get you in on the first night where people are paying slightly less attention, and we'll get through it. Huge night for Joe Biden personally, obviously not that significant a night for the campaign.
So they're going to say he's a great fella, but we had to get rid of, not mention the fact, we had to get rid of him. And also we covered up his mental health decline all these years and pretend it wasn't happening until it was fully visible to the public in that July debate.
There will be an attempt to lock in his legacy of what a phenomenal public servant leader this individual was, to humbly step aside when he knew that it was an issue himself, and that he took himself off the stage. And how could any politician ever do such a thing? As if he hadn't for 2 or 3 weeks put the head down and said, no, I'm staying, I'm not leaving, I'm not bringing it through. But that's important. People will now decide, I love Joe Biden again. He'll get a huge reaction if they feel positive about Joe Biden. I mean the Democratic crowd here,
yes,
now.
Yes, yeah.
If they feel very positive about Joe Biden, they'll continue to feel very positive about Kamala Harris.
And yet the sound of the other end of the legacy will be outside, which is Gaza. How it's divided the Democrats, and it's again another division they're covering at the moment, isn't it? That exists in the Democrat Party.
Yeah, and imagine if we didn't have the change at the top of Tibbick, the level of protests would be the story. It would be all we'd be talking about would be the protests around Gaza if Joe Biden was still top of the ticket. Another reason for why he actually just have to go. They've managed to skate over it thus far. There will be significant protests. There's already at some of the kind of smaller events leading into it, there have been protesters taking the mic and talking about the issue in Gaza. I think because they've switched the top of the ticket, because in comparison to Joe Biden, Kamala Harris is stronger on the Palestinian issue, it's probably going to be less effective. And also people have
verbally, but not really changing the policy at all, is she?
Not thus far.
She
verbally
says
stronger.
Things,
says
she?
Stronger things, yeah. more condemnation.
See what I mean? Shiny version of Joe Biden.
But that is what it is. That in many ways, that's
you were saying
what
that's
it is.
A good thing.
That, I'm saying that's a strong campaign.
Strong campaign issue. Yeah, yeah, okay. Can you ask your guest, this is Lorcan Nile, if the assassination attempt, this is a good question, which he's going to mention endlessly, will figure in his favour, because it certainly figures in the election ads. Defiant, bloodied fists in the air. That was the thing we all said was, he's won the election here. Mm. How long ago that feels like. But that's surely still going to work in his favour, isn't it?
Ever so slightly, in that it does lock in his and cement his base that bit more. So Trump,
just the base? Because he looks really tough in the image.
He does, but the cycle moves on so quickly. Now, it's a difference between 46 and 48% on this election. If Trump gets 46, he loses. If he gets 48 within the swing states, he probably wins, just in the way it breaks down. So, I mean, that can make a difference there, but it's moved on so quickly. It's also impacted him a bit, I think. I think he's a bit more reticent himself.
How could it not? Yeah.
How could it not? Yeah. And on a very human level, I mean, he's now behind bulletproof glass, okay, for all of his outdoor rallies. Of course that affects you, but the
they're
image
all
of
indoor
it,
now, aren't they?
Indoor, and if he's outdoor, they've got bulletproof glass.
He still goes outdoor.
He does now, yeah. But it has impacted him, and because I think people are so locked in their views, I'm actually not sure it's going to make that big a difference. People who love Trump loved him anyway. They're going to turn out anyway. So I'm not sure how big a difference it's going to make. And imagine that. I mean, he had that image. I mean, a defining image.
I know, yeah.
And we've already forgotten it. And now it's
thing,
oh yeah,
year.
I remember that there. Yeah.
It's not over yet, though. You think she's campaigning? I mean, if she was campaigning really well, she has the weight of all the media behind her. She should be ahead, storming ahead in the polls.
It's so far from over. I mean, just because my view of the polling of the answer would be that she is currently winning does not mean that she is going to win. What I do think is going to happen is after the convention, I think they'll probably do it relatively well. It's easy to do a convention well in this environment. They'll do it quite well. They'll major on the abortion issue, which will play very, very strongly for them.
Which Trump is not mentioning it at all.
Which Trump doesn't
so
want to talk about because it plays so badly. They'll major on that. You'll have people who are affected by it as big speakers, big prediction. There'll be people who are affected by the abortion bans speaking at the Democratic convention in primetime slots. they'll get a bounce of about 3%. That will put her about 5% in national head-to-heads for a period of time, okay? What matters then is how will Trump deal with that, with being behind.
Lorcan Nine, you love vacuous campaigns. That's why he's in PR, friends.